Welcome to Totally Unprepared. I'm Dave Champion and my co-host Bill Carnes, and together we are
Totally Unprepared.
Well, today we're going to start out by talking about something that I think is timely because of recent events, and that is that the Department of Justice released the summary of its report concerning the Ferguson Police Department. Now, it's very important to note this has nothing to do with the shooting of Brown. This was merely, the shooting of Brown was the impetus for DOJ to look at the Ferguson Police Department. They've done that. As Bill and I are recording this today, they are releasing the main body of the report, but yesterday they released the summary, which said the Ferguson Police Department is highly engaged in racist activities. Bill, what do you think about that?
This is Eric Holder's Department of Justice,
right? It is that.
The same guy that was behind the whole gun smuggling to Mexican cartels, right?
Correct.
Okay, the same guy that's been behind a number of things that are really unconstitutional and illegal.
Yeah. I would like to, in my mind, hope there's a separation between at the highest executive level with, for instance, him and Barack Obama colluding to commit felonies versus the guys in the trenches who are sent out to do these investigations.
I think there's absolutely not a snowball's chance in hell that that's gone on. And I'll tell you why. As soon as the news broke with this whole thing going on this last fall, mm-hmm. You had Eric Holder and Barack Obama both releasing statements before any of the real information was in. Eric Holder went there. It was very, very politically charged. DOJ even looking into it is very politically charged. This is going to be looked at, scrutinized, and the report's going to be put together and approved at the highest level.
By the way, I should tell you, part of their report states there was no civil rights violation or discriminatory conduct on behalf of the officer in the Brown shooting. So they cleared the officer of any racial motivation in the shooting.
And that officer actually stepped up and did the right thing to save that department and save that community when he resigned a couple of months ago.
He did. That was a good move. But you know, he was not taking anything away from the correctness of that move, but he received donations that totaled 10 years of his salary. So he is certainly not hurting any.
Well, I have to say, in a way, good for him. We had, of course, the race baiters out there. Obama and Holder are certainly part of them.
Absolutely.
Al Sharpton was out there. All the race baiters out there, because there was a white cop that shot a black youth. Well, actually, a young adult. And, of course, that's got to be racist, which is ridiculous. The policing in general has very racially divided tendency. And again, I hate the term racism. There's one race, it's the human race. I see this as cultural differences. I'm going to use the term race because it's incorrectly used all the time.
That's what people relate to.
And I hate using it. It's like clips in magazines for guns. They're different. Don't interchange those. Anyhow, the policing industry needs to be revamped from every department, coast to coast, top to bottom, because it has gotten so polluted mm-hmm. over the decades that it's wrong now. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking mm-hmm. virtually every cop that's out there, much like Congress, needs to be booted, the whole slate wiped clean, and a brand new set of training and people brought in, because it is so wrong. For DOJ to go in and say, this department has some racial issues behind it, show me one that won't. Right. It's that polluted. It really is.
Now, of course, Ferguson is a little bit different in that it's a predominantly black community.
With almost an entirely white department.
Yes, they have four black officers in their entire department. And they're policing a predominantly black community.
Yeah.
Now, one of the statistics that was released in the summary, and we'll see a lot more statistics in the whole body of the report, was that despite the fact that statistics show when they search the cars of white people, they statistically are more likely to come up with contraband, and the way they define contraband in the summary was illegal drugs or illegal firearms. Okay? They are more likely to come up with them in the cars that are owned or controlled by white drivers. Despite that statistical truth, the police department searches black vehicles twice as often as white vehicles.
but it's a predominantly black community, right?
Right. We look at these things, then we have to figure out exactly how
it's
math. Sort out.
It's math. And you know what would be interesting? To take that report and take all skin color out of it, from police, from suspects, from everything, and just, are they doing their job properly? Did a car get stopped, and was it a constitutionally lawful stop? Was the vehicle searched? Was it a constitutionally lawful search?
Right.
Was it seized? Were the people properly arrested? Were any of these things done illegally? I'd like to see that report with no skin color, no accents, whoever's got a first language is English or a third language is English, all of that removed, and just find out, are they actually doing the job?
Right. But that would, of course, completely obviate the purpose of the investigation, which was to determine whether there were civil rights violations. Now, one of the another statistic I found interesting was that the number of cars pulled over and searched where they were owned or controlled by blacks was a third higher than the percentage of blacks in the population.
Dave, I have to apologize because it was something you just closed your last statement with before you got into this that I have been stuck on.
Go ahead.
It was about looking for civil rights violations.
Right. That's okay. What the whole investigation was about.
I don't have civil rights. I have unalienable rights.
Right.
Because I'm an original class citizen of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
Of the states, a state class citizen. A civil right is, of course, donned through the 14th Amendment, mm-hmm. which is essentially the way it was written, is interpreted to cover free black slaves, of which we don't even have any anymore.
Yeah, free black slaves and their posterity.
Oh, okay, there you go, and their posterity.
So says the U.S. Supreme Court, not me.
And I understand that. So my point is, if I were ever to have my rights violated, I would seek out an attorney that would file a suit on my behalf for violation of my unalienable rights, not my civil rights.
Now, see, herein lies the problem, though. We have Title 42. Section 1981, 82, 83, 84, 85, and 86, which are the Civil Rights Act.
Yes.
Okay. There are federal statutes that you can say, if you violated X, they're all based on the 14th Amendment, if you violated X, you have violated the law. If you have done X, you violated the law. There are no such provisions in law anywhere at the state or the federal level for violating your unalienable rights.
Oh, and I understand that.
Yes.
I do.
So it would have to be like a constitutional tort would have to be the basis of the suit.
Correct.
And but then it's still civil, not criminal.
You and I both know that when I feel like ringing a bell, I want to ring the biggest, loudest, damned bell that there is.
I've noticed this.
And I don't go ringing the bell that often, but when I do, damn it, people are going to hear me ringing that bell.
Yeah.
Which is why I hope my rights don't get violated, because I will find the biggest bell of the land to ring my unalienable rights being violated from.
All right. While we're speaking of violating rights, let's talk about that video that came out with LAPD.
Oh, yes. Very interesting.
Yeah. The scenario was, I don't know why the cops were there. In all the articles I've read, that has never been revealed.
I did read something that allegedly they were investigating a robbery, like a person-to-person robbery.
All right. And so they show up at this area, it's like a skid row environment.
Yes.
Homeless people living on the sidewalk. And one guy, a couple of officers jack up, that's in the foreground, seems to be pretty plain vanilla, nothing's going wrong or bad. In the background, you see five officers or so engaged with another individual in some sort of a tent type structure. You see a lot of obvious rolling around on the ground, trying to control, get him handcuffed or under some sort of control. And at least the version I've seen is too fuzzy to tell exactly what's happening. But all of a sudden, bap, 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 bap. There's a lot of shots. And then
suspect's
down. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, a number of interesting things happened during the initial scuffle. Two of the cops, their batons, their PR-24s, fell out onto the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
And you see a woman go over and she grabs him and picks him up and then steps backwards while she's holding him. The two cops that lost their batons notice this And they tackle her and rough her up and take these things away. And they literally crank her up and slap the cups on her. And, you know, cause, and they articulate in the report that they figured that she was going to come after them. You can clearly see she grabs them and she's stepping back.
It's like safeguarding them in a sense.
Almost, yeah. Like they're going to step on these. Somebody's going to break their ring. I don't think she knew exactly why she's doing what she's doing, but just like, look, these things are in the way the scuffle's going on. She grabs them and backs up.
She's a woman. There's clutter she's picking.
Right. Right. Obviously part of that community.
I'm going to get some emails on that one.
Obviously part of that community, it seems. She's probably
right,
part of it.
Right.
But yeah, the cops are tackling this guy. He's fighting back. They go to tase him. They allege he was reaching for a cop's gun when a cop shot him. Mm-hmm. It gets a type 2 malfunction, a stovepipe as they call it, right? So, of course, what do they say to that?
It's justification that shows the guy was reaching for the gun.
He had his hands on the gun, which is why it malfunctioned. There's all kinds of reasons for a type 2 or stovepipe malfunction.
Right.
Somebody's hand being on him could be one of them. Could be.
Right. But
there's a whole lot of other scenarios
yeah.
out there.
And the part that killed me about that is LAPD.
Bad technique is one of them.
LAPD came out and said, excuse me, that the stovepipe was proof that the guy had his hand. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa,
horse whoa. Hockey. Proof my foot. Horse hockey.
Yeah, yeah. You know what a stovepipe is proof of? There was a stovepipe.
Yeah, that's all. That's it. Yeah. It poor technique can cause that.
Right.
You know, rubbing up against anything, your own hand, if your support thumb is there.
Lip wristing. Oh, right? Yeah, anything.
Imagine that, lip wristing.
Hard to believe.
Yeah.
My biggest beef of this whole thing, and you mentioned this a little bit at lunch, I'm huge on this. I'm a bear on this. This is my big bell. Okay. Once again, we have a situation, use of force with cops, where we're left to wonder what the hell happened because there are no
body cameras.
Jesus, how many? This is so freaking simple. Stop wondering what the hell is happening and put body cams on, and we'll know. This whole thing about, well, what really happened? We live in the age of technology. Why are we asking what really happened?
The tens of millions, hundreds probably of millions of dollars lost across the country with departments doing unnecessary investigations that are elongated and paying out in settlements and fines and internal investigations that could be solved by watching a body cam video. The body cam videos save money for every department that has it. And on top of that, for LAPD to come out and immediately vindicate the shooting, having not fully investigated it, shows you right then and there that it's a dirty system, it's a dirty situation, and it is not, it's not right. It's all messed up.
It'll call the final investigation into question because they already came out without it being complete.
Imagine.
And we'll be back right after these words. We are back, and now it's time for all right. What is up? What is it with women trying to define what makes a man a man? What makes a man a good man? It's amazing to me. Now, I've noticed a lot of this on social media. And, you know, social media is very interesting in that it can be, you know, it's not terribly important, but it can be fun. It can be useful in certain areas. But it's also good for sort of looking at cultural trends. And lately I've noticed, lately being the last handful of months, I've noticed a plethora of women trying to express on social media what a real man is. And, you know, oftentimes it's just complaining that there are no real men, things like that. So sometimes I'll do a private message on Facebook to one of these gals, or perhaps I'll run into them in the gym, or around town. I'll say, hey, I saw that post about real men. And, tell me, what is a real man? Right? And they'll say, well, a real man is honest and doesn't play games. Oh my God. A woman trying to define for a man what is a real man is like the Taliban trying to tell an American what a real American is. And a woman saying that what makes a man not a real man is playing games is like a suicide bomber complaining the other guy has explosives. Okay. It's just insane. Now, when I say that women play games, okay, they're the game players, not the men. Men, we're simple. Feed us the other F thing you do. You know, we're pretty simple. Now, but here's the game women play. Okay? So let's say I walk up to a woman and I say, hi.
Hi.
And I say something like, I think you're attractive.
I like that.
Perhaps we could spend some time together.
Oh, I think I'd like that.
Maybe this weekend we'll go out to dinner.
I think I'd like that.
And next week there's a show. Perhaps we'll go see a show together.
Oh, I'm sure I'd like that.
And at some point, the gentleman says, you know, I like you enough that I think I'd like to have sex with you.
I might like that, but first there's a few conditions that you're going to have to submit to.
There we go. There is the gamesmanship right there. And of course, what is the blackmail, the conditions, right? It's very, very simple. The woman essentially says to the man, I will give you rights to my kitty if you will raise your right hand and swear that you're not going to be involved with any other kitty. Okay. Now, Bill, what do you think about all this?
I like dogs. I don't like cats.
Whoa, what are you saying?
Meow. Okay. Fuzzy, purr. No. Let's see. We're talking about women defining men.
Yes.
As much as we could have men defining what is a real woman. I would imagine that if we got a group of women together and their purpose was to define a real man.
Right.
And a bunch of guys together to define what is a real man, the definitions are going to be completely different.
Oh, you think?
And I would imagine if we had the same conversation in those groups about what defines a real woman, they're going to be different. So, and you're gonna have to take this where you got a group of women that says, well, all of these things would make a real man, but all of these things make a real woman. The guys are gonna be different on both of those things, and of course they're gonna disagree on all of it. So I think everything is completely asinine. You know, it's like I go to a bar to meet a woman. You know, she's got good conversational abilities, maternal qualities, and you know, right? Yeah, that's why we're going.
Yeah, yeah. So. But wait a second. Let me interrupt you for a second.
Sure.
Let's get back on the main theme here. Okay.
I was trying to come full circle, but what, I wasn't sure I was going to make it.
Now, we all know the truth. I know it's not politically correct to say this, but Bill and I are hardly politically correct guys.
Geez.
What is the guy's number one agenda with women?
Oh, to get laid.
To get laid,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So now the woman says, well, we're only going to do that if you
agree to these conditions,
which generally the number one condition is you don't do this with anybody.
Yeah, this is exclusive.
This is, right. Yeah. Which is crazy because it's normally like these days, this isn't 40 years ago. These days, by the time that moment comes along when you might be engaging in carnal knowledge, a guy and a girl today that are out dating, people don't really even date anymore from what I hear from younger people. But nevertheless, by the time it comes time to knock boots, you don't know each other well enough to have an exclusive relationship, but yet, women, that's the thing right there. Well, if you touch it, you can't touch any other. And most of them don't even know what to do with it. And yet they want to say, oh, mine and only mine. What is that? What happened to the sexual revolution? Went through a sexual revolution in the 60s and 70s, and we're still here at this BS point.
It's interesting. Because oftentimes you'll find a woman that wants to lay that condition down, but because she's laying it down, you might interpret as the guy that, well, she's saying that she'll be exclusive with me, when that is not necessarily the case.
Oh, of course not. Right.
Not necessarily the case.
But of course, and how many men do you know?
And then if they go through this, don't judge me. Wait a minute. You held me to some conditions and now I can't judge you.
Right. And when does a guy, when they're contemplating their first coupling, when does a guy say, you can only have my member if you promise to have no other member? this is definitely a one-way street, and yet they turn around and say, oh, you play games. We play games. We're not the one doing the blackmail. And of course, what's the number one goal? We've already decided this, right?
Do you know? That's what most men are. Not all. I mean, we're painting this as what the broad stroke.
Well, absolutely.
We're glittering generalities, if you will. Glittering generalities. Everybody doesn't fit into this, right? So,
but do you see these two things in conflict? The guy wants to get laid, and the girl is saying, "If you touch mine, you can't touch any other." How is that? When a woman says men play games, how is that supposed to turn out?
I don't know. It's like, hey, that's not what your little sister said. I mean, how are you supposed to handle that, right? I'm just...
You know what rodeo sex is, right?
You know what? I was afraid where this segment might go when you started. And we're there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay. that was the safe answer.
Short answer is yes, I do. Yeah.
I thought I was going to have to actually bring that out right here. If you don't know, Google it.
Texas foreplay.
It's fun.
Getting the drunk.
Yeah. So what is the whole...
What's the dynamic?
Where does this leave the whole equation with this apparent conflict that causes one side's playing games, women, accusing men of playing games, which is really in response to the game they're playing.
I read a meme on Facebook several months ago. It was hilarious. It said, women think they're special because they can fake an orgasm. Men can fake an entire relationship.
No, right.
And I read that. I'm like, that's very harsh
and
pretty funny to read, actually. Yeah. So, man, I don't know.
I know some women that have faked an entire relationship.
Oh,
my ex-wife.
Yes, haven't we all? It's funny because there are evildoers throughout American society, be they men or women. A lot of them enter into various things, either business practices or personal relationships, which this is getting into, that have literally ulterior motives.
Business relationship? Is that what we're talking about?
Or personal relationships.
Sometimes they cross. We're talking about renting versus ownership
a
little earlier.
Yes, we did. Yeah. Renting versus ownership. But this is where sometimes people go in with their own ulterior motive. I mean, how often have you met a woman, started dating a woman or something like that, and you find out she's got hang-ups from somebody she used to date or be married to years ago, and now you're paying the price, right?
Ex-wife. Never had it happen.
Yeah, I mean, you might be dating somebody now that had a relationship 5, 10, 15 years ago that is somehow emotionally scarred from that or mentally scarred from it, and yet you're now paying the price from that. I mean, I got to tell you, that's one thing. It's like, guys, if you're going to go out there and you're going to be dogs and really screw a woman up, you're really messing that up for somebody else down the road.
Yeah.
You really are, because every other guy is going to pay that price that you didn't have to pay. So I got to tell you, based on that, if I'm going to end up, you know, being in a relationship with a woman and we break up and I've had to put up with that garbage, I tell you, she's going to end up with a lot of mental baggage for you if you pick her. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I'm just.
I mean, I am just, and I've got to admit, I'm real bad with that too. If somebody I'm in a relationship with blasts off at me about something that I didn't do and has nothing to do with me, and it's very clear it's baggage from some other relationship, I mean, I don't mean to be harsh, but I put the clamp on that right away because
I am with you. Yeah,
because I mean, I don't do it to them. I mean, I know by our age, everybody's got some baggage, okay? Just human nature. But I know what mine is, and I do not pull it out and throw it at new people. And so I don't allow it to be done to me. But it's always disconcerting, and it's a red flag for me, too. And I'm sure you've been in the same boat. You start down the road, you're in a relationship, and all of a sudden the person you're developing this relationship with starts doing that.
Yeah.
It's a red flag. It's
look,
like, okay,
I've had trouble with this before because this didn't go well with me, so I'm not going to... It's like,
you're not mature enough to have realized don't do that?
My girlfriend, we've been together for about 6.5 years or so now, almost close to that. And she's really not done that to me. There's been a couple of instances where she's articulated she had a bad experience based on this, that, or the other, or an old boyfriend was this way or that way, but stops before she would get to, so for those reasons, you're not allowed to this or you can't that.
Yeah,
she's really good about
communicating
it.
Communicating, it's one thing.
Yeah, and we've talked to you.
Dumping on you because of it is something.
Absolutely. Different. And we've talked through some things on both sides. Like, she's told me stories about where, you know, her interpretation of how something's gone, and it's been negative, and I sympathize with that. I do the same with her, but at the same token, we have never had this whole thing where, you know, because this lousy thing happened in my prior relationship, I'm not going to tolerate that from you, and vice versa.
Yeah, that's
garbage.
Nonsense.
You know, it's just, I understand not wanting to get hurt again, but the thing is do a little bit of due diligence and pick better. Women, ladies, you have a very bad habit of hooking up with bad guys.
Yeah.
That don't treat you nice.
And choosing the same guy time and time again.
Yeah, nice guys finish last. I get you. I mean, there's got to be kind of a rough element to the guys. I know I've got some rough elements. I know this guy's got some rough elements. And that's okay. But the thing is...
What?
you're not there to, like, treat a woman bad. There's rough elements that guys have that they're all for themselves. They could
care less
about you. You're
not there to treat them bad. It just happens.
Yeah, it's just, you know. But
kidding.
There's some gentlemen that are out there, and gentlemen's not the right word. There's some real schmucks out there.
There are.
Some real fools that just don't care. And you can see through their history that's the way they are. So just avoid that. Make it easy on everybody. And stop saying we're the ones playing the games. We're just reacting a lot of times.
That's right. That's the point I want to make. And if you set up that dynamic in advance by playing that game, how's that going to end?
Yeah, I'll play the game. You're just setting down the rules.
Yeah. And we'll be back.
Welcome back from the break. Now it's time for... You know what really grinds my gears? 20-somethings that speak in text. OMG, LOL. Seriously? I was actually watching an interview on Fox News a couple of months back. And it was something ridiculous about whoever won the Miss America pageant or Miss USA or whatever pageant it was from Nevada, where I live. Had more recently lived in California, and just a few months ago moved to Nevada specifically to compete as Miss Nevada and try to win, and did, but evidently didn't have a chance as Miss California. So they had a former beauty queen on there, Miss 20-something who knows what. In the interview, she was speaking in text. OMG, LOL. The lady who was doing the interview allowed that to go, and then started asking her another question, to which then she responded something like, hashtag funny for Britney 217. What? What the hell does that mean? Funny, hashtag anything. Anybody who says hashtag, I got to tell you, we used to call it a pound sign. And when I hear you saying hashtag, I want to give you my pound sign. Quit articulating the hashtags. Quit going through the ridiculous text. I got to tell you, if I'm sitting there and I want to hire somebody and I'm doing an interview and I ever hear OMG or LOL or whatever the other garbage could come out of their mouth, at that moment, the interview's over and you're being escorted off the property. If you do this kind of garbage and you don't wake up, I got to tell you, life is not social media. It's social media. It's not social interaction. How many Facebook friends do I have? I got to tell you, it's about half of what it used to be because I purposely went through and started dialing them out just a few months ago. And I put a post up, hey, if you come back in a day or two and you realize we're no longer Facebook friends because I don't really know you and I'm trimming it down. And you know something? I am about to do it again. The wave two is coming soon, Dave. I'm telling you, wave two is coming. And I'm going to take a lot of people that I never get anything useful out of. It is a waste of my time. First of all, I don't spend much time on Facebook anymore. I never really did in the first place. I don't spend much time there. I don't get much out of it. It's a waste of time. And if you're going to start speaking in the terminology that you type in there or on your little smartphone or any of that other garbage, if you're a glow face, if you're such a glow face that you're sitting there, your face is glowing because you're looking at the screen on your smartphone, you're an idiot. Put it down, look up, and enjoy the world. Another thing that really bothers me with this technology, right? You go to a concert, and in the concert, you're staring at the artist or band. And a lot of people are watching it through their screen because they're filming it. If they just did this, they could actually see the show. See the difference? I'm looking at my screen and filming this. No, I can actually see the show. If I wanted to watch a television presentation of the artist, I'd stay home, pull up their name on YouTube, and watch that. It'd save me the time, the travel, the concert ticket, all that other garbage, because it's free. All I need is Wi-Fi, and I can watch it then. Put these devices down and stop speaking in their language. Did you ever, Dave, did you ever during binary code on computers have anybody speak to you in dots and dashes, ones and twos? 1-1-1-2-1-1-2-2-1-1-2-2-1-1-2?
S-R-S-L-Y, seriously.
L-M-F-A-L.
S-M-H.
WTF. Seriously, WTF. I got to tell you, when I see this go on, I have four daughters. I have no sons. I have four daughters, three of whom are high school age daughters, mm-hmm. right? One is a little older and recently married. And my oldest daughter has really come along. She spent her last 2 years in high school exclusively with me. Her mother and I got divorced when she was very young. And she really came around. She's, you know her.
Mm-hmm. She's awesome.
She is. Yeah. Nobody meets my daughter that doesn't say she rocks. It just doesn't exist.
I have pictures of the three of us.
Yes, yeah. And she's a great shot, by the way. When she moved back east with her fiancé, now husband, I gave her a Glock as a gift. She knows how to use it. She is totally down.
Right on.
But, you know, she never plays this. And she's the type of person to say, I mean, she does some social media. She's very, very computer savvy, very social media savvy. But she knows the limitations of it. And doesn't do the OMG, LOL, WTF. You know, my younger daughters are not quite as enveloped as a lot of their friends in their social areas and their social network.
Yeah.
But occasionally I'll hear something silly like that. And I got to tell you, I do not let it slide. I do not let, no.
Funny story. SMH. Okay.
What is that?
Shake my head.
Okay.
Okay.
Not shake my hand?
No, no.
And PMF, pound my fist.
And, well, it's funny because when I first saw it, I don't know what that means, right? And I'm thinking, sex might help. That was my personal interpretation of that until somebody straightened me out.
And I just now learned what it is, yeah. Shaking my head.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you Google texting abbreviations. I mean, the
it's ones probably gonna be endless.
The ones that I use when I text, if something is amusing, I do one of two things. Either I'll put LOL to let them know that there's humor.
See the humor
because you know sure. Texting can result in some miscommunication.
Oh, it has for everybody. I'm
absolutely.
Sure. It, like you can put something down and you read it and I like to read my text before I send them. Because you could put something down, and you're like, they might think that's kind of harsh. So you put like LOL at the end. Like, I'm not really serious. I'm just venting or
yes,
whatever.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
Meant more humorously, not seriously. Or the other thing is, I use emoticons, which, you know, they have all sorts
that
of.
That is such a high school chick thing. You do that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, the thing is, he's laughing. It does the same thing, though. I mean, different emoticons can, after you've written out the text, adding an emoticon can change how they interpret that. So I use that to more effectively communicate because texting is not a great way. It's a great way to cause misunderstandings.
You know, I got to tell you another thing, electronically speaking, that really drives me nuts is I've got this, you know, fancy new smartphone. You have another version of a fancy smartphone. And I have never had more dropped calls than with this newer all digital technology. Never. I gotta tell you, I used to have better call, stability, if you will, back in the old days of the analog brick. Remember, it was a big brick?
Yes.
It was just after when you used to have to carry it in a satchel. The brick had less dropped calls than this does.
And let me explain why. The analog signal, it would stay connected because of the way the analog signal operates. Even though the call might have been degraded, you might still hear, you're catching some syllables, you know what's being said, but the way analog works, it would not terminate the call. With digital, when enough of the call drops out, the network senses that.
Done.
And ends the call.
Yeah. And, you know, this sort of thing happens when I'm sitting in my house and I've got four out of five bars or all five bars. Plus, I have backup to switch a call to Wi-Fi if the network drops.
Mm-hmm.
Still, it drops. It still drops. And I gotta tell you, I can't wait, Dave, for the day that the technology comes out where they can actually run a stream of wires across the country, where we could actually pick up a fixed device and it goes through a wired system, so we don't have to rely on this obviously unreliable digital airwaves anymore.
Yeah.
We could literally pick it up and it would be a phone that's connected into lines. And when we can advance to that, that'd be awesome.
Quick story. The first time I realized that, because, you know, texting when it first happened, it's like, oh, this is magic. This is great, right? And then you realize there are the problems we talked about. And I'll never forget that when the light bulb went on for me, I was texting with a buddy of mine, Stan, who I've known for 20, 25 years. We're like brothers from another mother. And all of a sudden, he and I are in this sort of heated, unpleasant discussion that appeared via text that appeared to be getting worse with every text sent. But the phenomenon of being so thoroughly misunderstood in tone and intention was new because texting was new. And I finally picked up the phone. I literally, like, put down the cell phone, picked up the hard line, called him. This is when we still had hard lines around. picked up the phone and said, Stan. And he's like, Dave. And we started talking. We realized that both of us had completely misinterpreted just this texting thing. And we laughed about it and it was all behind
sure.
us. But that made me sensitive to how easily this technology.
Yeah, and everybody does it with the emoticons and different things. But, you know, also you have to realize that we used to be limited to 140 characters. I believe that is what you get on Twitter.
It is.
I don't tweet. I have a Twitter account, and I have no idea why. As a matter of fact, I know when I started that Twitter account, you called me up about 5 years ago, and 5 or 6 years ago, and you said, hey, there's a something that somebody said something about you on Twitter. You might want to go look it up, but you wouldn't tell me what it was. And it was something that we had going back and forth that was funny, and somebody had made a comment, and it was funny. I had to create a Twitter account to read that. And there you go. I think I left one tweet, and it might have been months ago about something. I don't know. I don't even know if I did.
It's Dave _ champion. You got, like, I don't know, 15,000 followers on Twitter?
Is that... Am I impressed? I want to be impressed. I don't
know if you're impressed. I'm impressed. I mean...
Oh, well, let me SYH. So with 140 character limit, the way text used to be, but is no longer, and then you've got Twitter, I can understand some of the abbreviations. But, you know, there's one person that is a former student of mine that's also a Facebook friend that will put stuff up on Facebook every now and again. And there's, like, all of these hashtags and all, it's like literally two lines of information and four lines of all these various hashtags. And I'm like, isn't that a Twitter thing? Why is that on Facebook?
Because you can program certain Facebook pages.
I don't want an answer.
Okay.
I don't. I really don't want an answer. I'm saying, holy crap, that is so bothersome. I got to tell you, one of these
days. Oh, it just bugs is what you're telling me.
It grinds my gears. It's getting closer and closer to the day. And I keep telling my girlfriend, I say, closer and closer, this phone's going to go.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to go to a basic flip phone or something that's a prepay. None of the garbage, none of it on there. Forget about the Facebook account. It's all going to go away. I'm just going to be tired. I'll drop down to like one email address, and it will be something new where I can trash all of my old ones. I the more that this stuff becomes part of our lives, the more I reject it. And back to the whole original thing about grinding my gears, don't speak it. Don't do it, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Ladies, gentlemen, don't speak in that garbage because you're not going to get past the beauty contest stage. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, it's just insane.
It is.
To talk like that.
It is. Wait till we come back, guys. We got something good for you out of the viewer mailbag. Dave.
Okay, so...
Hashtag. We surely are totally unprepared because neither one of us opened that segment waiting on the other. By the way,
send your emails
to us right down here, daveandbillshow@gmail.com.
Yeah, yeah. All right. What are we talking about? Oh, yes.
The Tooler drill.
Tooler drill. We had a viewer send us an email in which he posed the question, does law enforcement, I think he did not use this word, but I think it was implicit in his question, improperly use the 21-foot rule as an excuse or justification to engage adversaries with a firearm that...
To shoot people.
Possibly shouldn't.
Yeah, to shoot people. I mean, Let's break it down. Are cops using the distance of 21 feet or less as an excuse to pull up their guns and shoot people who could be some sort of an articulable threat from levels 1 through 3 rather than 8, 9, and 10?
Okay, now, because our audience does not have our background...
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Explain Sergeant Tuller's drill and all that.
Dennis Tuller was a sergeant in Salt Lake City, Utah, and many years ago, he and Chuck Taylor were working out this whole thing about if... You're standing there, you know, flat-footed, 21 feet away from somebody, gun in the holster, and they run at you with a knife. Do you have time to pull your gun out and shoot them before they get to you? And really, the answer to that is, for the most part, no. Or, if nothing else, in that sprint, if you shoot them, they still got forward momentum, you can get cut. So, the rule of thumb, and keep in mind, this is not set court precedent. A lot of people believe that it is. I've even seen where people say, well, now it's been extended to 30 feet, and that's in court. It is not.
Right.
That is not. I challenge anybody watching us anywhere to do any sort of research and find any court that has made that as some sort of a part of their ruling, that there's 21 or 30 feet, and within that you can engage if you can articulate a threat of death or serious bodily injury, imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury from the suspect, blah, blah, blah. All of the court garbage, all the articulation. So the 21-foot rule, or it's also known as the Tuller rule, and I have to say, I know Chuck Taylor personally, and he's a little butthurt over the idea that it's called the Tuller drill because he claims he really came up with it, and somebody provided the Tuller name to it later. Okay.
Now, quick comment just to clarify. If I've got a knife in my hand, and on the go signal from 21 feet, I charge as quickly and aggressively as I can towards Bill. His firearm is holstered. The theory is at 21 feet, the best case for him is that he'll get rounds into me and I'll still be able to do this to him because of momentum.
Yeah, and that's action versus reaction. It's not right. Like go and everybody goes. You have to react to them moving. Because I got to tell you, I'm pretty fast with a handgun. And 21 feet is, it might be an excuse for me, but anyhow. So to get back to the initial part, now that we've defined the 21-foot rule or the Tuller drill.
First of all, we should say, for the audience, only applies to a suspect who has an edged weapon. Does not apply to open hand, does not apply to firearms.
Yeah.
Only to an edged weapon.
Right.
Okay.
So when it comes down, I think that the question, the way that it came into us and the way that it was posed, was possibly missing a lot of elements. Like, again, this not being part of standing court law.
Right.
Do we think that cops maybe closed the gap on somebody with a knife to have the excuse to shoot them? I really don't think so. I think that police training and articulation when it comes to using deadly force nowadays is absolutely polluted. I made that clear earlier in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. As a matter of fact, one of the things in the LAPD shooting recently that we mm-hmm. chatted about that happened just a couple days back over the weekend, I think, was that you heard drop the gun. And we talked about this at lunch a little
yes.
bit. We're not totally unprepared. We're relatively unprepared because we do talk about some stuff. And a lot of stuff we chat about never actually makes it into the show. But
correct.
Here we go. One of the things that I have actually been a part of and witness to mm-hmm. is police training where they articulate, if you have to bring out your gun and shoot along the way, make sure you shout nice and clear, drop the gun or knife or club or kitten or whatever lethal object they have. Shout that on the way out before you press the trigger. And if you ended up shooting and you didn't shout that beforehand, shout it afterwards because, wink, wink, some people who are audible witnesses to this will state during the investigation, oh yeah, he said drop the gun and then the shots rang out when it may have happened the other way.
Yeah.
And cops only need enough to sound one way to be able to articulate. Say, oh, the people that said they heard it afterwards, they were the wrong ones.
The most egregious case I heard of this, I actually witnessed this. You may have watched the video too. Black male in probably a mid-90s Ford Explorer.
It wasn't a white Bronco, was it?
No. He gets pulled over, some domestic thing, and cops were at the scene and told him fine, take off. You know, they didn't find him being culpable. Told him fine, take off. somehow, some reason, another cop pulls him over, supposedly related to the same event. The black guy, the driver, puts his hands up against the interior of the windshield, okay? You can't get much less combative than that, right? A cop comes over, shatters the driver's window, okay? Reaches in, starts punching the guy. His hands are still against, and he's, stop resisting, okay? And then he opens the door and he pulls the guy under the gun. The guy's face down on the ground. The officer's like knee dropping him and he's yelling, stop going for my gun! The guy's face down. And they, you know, so that's how bad these practices can get.
Cops are trained that way in a lot of departments across the country. Not all departments, but a lot of them. And if they're not officially trained that way amongst themselves, this is what they do.
Yeah.
And I think it's coming full circle, Dave. How does all this come to an end?
How do you mean?
How does all of this stop?
Oh, body cams.
Body cams.
They are the answer. If we consider illegal or unjustified police violence to be a cancer, body cams are the cure.
And on the flip side of the coin, if people really are scumbags, they deserve to get their asses whipped or to get shot or whatever it is, that is total justification. And ends a lot of things like civil suits. You know, we were talking about it in, where was it? Was it Corona, California, I think, where they had these things? And
66% reduction in complaints?
No, it was like 86% reduction in officer-involved complaints and another 90-something percent reduction. And I got to tell you, all that saves cops that have to work at internal affairs, do all these investigations, interview people, try to come up with things. That's a lot of time for a lot of cops to do.
Right.
Now, those guys can be on the street doing work rather than internally looking at things like false claims or say, oh, this is truly justified.
There's actually a video out there on YouTube of a trucker, and he's got a camera in his rig, and a state trooper pulls him over, and the state trooper is being incredibly verbally abusive to him. And the trucker doesn't say a word for some period of time, and then he says, I want you to know that there's a camera running with audio. The cop's face is just worth $1 million, right? Excuse me, sir. Could I ask you for your cooperation? I mean, his attitude changed from day to night. Now, in fairness to the good cops out there, right?
Both of you. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Go on.
It saves the good cops, yes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because the same thing works the other way. The internal investigators don't have to guess. The public doesn't have to guess. The media doesn't have to guess. The video shows the good cop did good.
360 degrees, totally spherical area. There is no bad reason for having these body cams.
Right.
Now, some people may argue, and it's generally the dirty cops who will argue this. Well, if I'm interviewing, say, a minor that was the victim of a sexual assault, we don't... Okay, you know what? The cop shouldn't be allowed to turn it on and off, on and off.
Oh, no.
It is internally, you have somebody that's able to edit that out and keep that separate.
Right. And if they talk about things like interviewing sexual abuse victims, especially children, they talk about, you know, bathroom breaks.
Okay.
That's real simple. Those things you write right into the statute. Okay. You say these things may not be disclosed under Freedom of Information Act requests. These things may not be disclosed even in a court of law without prior in-camera, back-in-chambers review by the judge to make sure that they are not in violation of the statute. And that even if they are covered by the statute, they can only be brought into the courtroom if they're relevant to the question before the jury. Okay, so there's ways to handle that. The cop puts it on. That thing runs from the moment he sits down in a squad car till the moment he takes his uniform off.
Yeah.
And what is available to the public is predicated on statute. Also, I said this helps the good cops. And on my show...
And it stops the bad cops. It can keep good cops good.
Yep.
And it can make bad cops...
Better.
Not quite so bad.
Yeah.
And then oftentimes weed them out. I got to tell you, enough of these things, they're going to change the hiring practices. They'll have to, because some of the bad cops won't be able to help themselves. They're going to have to start firing them.
Yes.
They're going to pay out some lawsuits on this sort of thing, and they'll be gone. And then they're going to change the hiring practices. I got to tell you, body cams, I said earlier in the show that there needs to be, we need to wipe the policing industry clean and start over fresh. And I got to tell you, body cams will cause that to happen for the better, for everyone for the better.
And let me support your statement in that. I think we know... All we need to know about the condition of law enforcement today is that most police unions oppose body cams. If they're supposed to be looking out for the best interest of their officers and having an objective, visual yardstick of what really happened, they don't like that. That tells us the condition of law enforcement in America right there.
Let me give you my two cents on unions. And this has come from somebody. I've been a member of a public employees union when I was a cop. Not because I wanted to, but because I felt I was, I had to.
Oh, you have to. When you're
oh, you, yeah. You don't have to, but you probably should.
No, not a union, an association.
Yeah. And I was also the president of a local printers union in Las Vegas years ago. It was just a small group of people. I don't even know why it existed. The first meeting I ever went to, they elected me president because nobody else wanted to do it. The guy that was president didn't want to be there.
Love it.
It was a joke. It still is a joke. Anyhow, the point is, unions came about because employers were not treating employees properly.
Correct.
There's now laws on the books that prevent that sort of abuse. There's really not much in the way of a need for a union anymore. And if you're a union member, I'm sorry to tell you, you don't deserve 2 to 3 times as much for hanging that drywall as a guy who's not a member of your union, because all that money is doing is going into your paycheck. It's coming back out. You're paying taxes on it. It's making the union bosses stronger, which they don't need. It's killing jobs in America. And with that, folks, we'll be back next week.
See ya.